There was a group of trappers that were trapping monkeys, and they came up with this plan that was very successful. They would take coconuts, and they would cut a small hole in the coconut and hollow it out.
When the monkeys found the coconuts, they would squeeze their hands in.
They would grab a big fistful of rice, and then they couldn't get their hands out because the hole was too small. Now, a very small percentage of monkeys would squeeze their hands back out. They'd let go of the rice, and they'd move on. The majority of the monkeys did not, and that's how they were trapped. And so people who studied this phenomenon were trying to figure out why this happened. And what they came up with was that the monkeys were so hungry that they couldn't let go of the rice. They were obsessed with having this rice and trying to get the rice out, even though it wasn't ever going to happen. Now, the irony of this is that they were surrounded by this verdant, abundant, overflowing with food jungle. Okay? So they're trying to get this hunger met and satisfied, and meanwhile, they're focusing on this small little thing right in front of them when they're surrounded by abundance. And so I have three questions for you that I would like you to take into your week. And the first one is, what are you truly hungry for? What are you truly hungry for? And when you answer that question for yourself, it's going to help you answer the next one. What is your rice? What are you holding on to that you think is going to satisfy a hunger, and it's actually limiting your freedom? And the third question is, now that you know that, what can you do to truly satisfy that hunger? I'll give you a hint. It's probably going to look like spiritual practices. Okay? Have you ever gone a really long time without eating? You wake up late, you sort of rush to work, you work through lunch, and your body starts screaming, right? You cannot make good choices when you're really hungry. This is where a lot of us get into trouble. So when you think about most people in the world, what do you think that most people are hungry for? There's two big ones. Anyone want to call anything out? Love, right? Bingo, right on the money. Love of self, right? Healthy relationship with ourself, with the universe, with our significant others, friends, family, okay? So holding on to the rice can look like holding on to something that is not serving us. It can look like holding on to the way that we were parented. Because our parents met our needs the best way they were able to, but they weren't always able to meet all of our needs. And so we can go well into adulthood trying to get these people to meet our needs when they're not able to do it that way. What do you think the second big one is? Money, right? Prosperity, right? But it's not just money. It's fulfilling work and health. And what does that look like? What does holding on to the rice look like in that area? It could look like being at a job that hasn't been the right fit in a really long time. And you haven't let it go. And so you're running on that hamster wheel, hoping that you're going to get some rice, when you know that the rice dried up there a long time ago. And so my message for you today is to let go of the rice. Let it go. I don't want you to misunderstand. I'm not telling you to leave and go divorce your husband and leave your quit your job. It's not what I'm saying. But stop trying to feed your hunger with something that isn't able to feed it, okay? Because just like the monkeys, we are surrounded by a sea of infinite love, a sea of infinite abundance. All the love that you could ever need is right here. You're not going to find it in the coconut. And you're not going to be able to experience it until you let go. And when you let go, seeming miracles can happen. And it won't be easy. It'll be scary. And your ego is going to try to convince you to hold on to that rice with everything you've got. But what's on the other side of it is this huge sense of relief. Because holding on to rice is exhausting. Okay? And when you let go, relationships can heal. Jobs can transform. You may get transferred into another department. You might get a promotion. Or yes, maybe letting go of the rice means leaving behind something that no longer serves you. Because maybe what your heart is truly hungry for is a big, tree-ripened, juicy jungle fruit. I mean, after all, it's organic. And rice is pretty boring. And you know the monkey trappers aren't buying fair trade rice. It's filled with pesticides. And you know it doesn't have enough nutrients. There's not even any vitamin C in it. And so letting go of the rice is going to look different for every person here. And I don't know what it's going to look like for you. But what I do know is that your higher self, the spirit within you, does know. And so where the first step is, always the first step, is to turn to God, to reconnect with your spiritual practices, to put the relationship with spirit first. Because God's love and abundance is unconditional, always available, and as close as your breath, and as near as your heart. It will never let you down. And so when you are filled with spirit, you're not hungry and you're able to make the best choices. So let spirit do what spirit does, because spirit really satisfies.
You know, I've been speaking on a subject for a long time. In bits and pieces, it's come across the conversations that work. Certain themes work their way into my classroom and into Sunday. And one of the things that was inspired by a shaman teacher of mine is the idea of collusion. So collusion, in what I want to bring to you today, and how it relates to agreements, because this whole month is about agreements. Collusion is when we as individuals choose to see in someone a particular side of them, okay? We each have inside of us all, everything. Everything that exists in all of us exists in one of us. Do you know that? Every characteristic, every quality, good and not so good, everything exists in all of us. So we all have access to it. Now, what happens is, unfortunately, a lot of those things we tend to reject, and then we project out, and then we deal with it with others in often a nasty way, you know, because we haven't gone into it, the embrace of our divine perfection. And then sometimes those of us who are in this crazy enough to just do it, we do the shadow work. And the shadow work is very intense work. It's very intense work. And if you ever decide to read the book and work with the book, Dark Side of the Light Chasers, please do it in good company. And I'm not being funny, because it could send you over the edge just a tad. It really touches places inside of you that maybe you're not used to touching. And even though all the beauty is there too, it focuses for a bit of time on your dark side. And so, you know, you know the story. There's this Indian chief that went to talk to his grandson. And he said to his grandson, you know, I have two wolves inside of me. And this one wolf is loving and sweet and compassionate and generous and always available and always good and always in joy. And then I have this other wolf that is inside of me, and this other wolf is jealous and angry and manipulative and always constricting and always full of fear. And the grandson says to his grandfather, the chief, he says, "Well, grandfather, which one will win the battle inside of you?" And the grandfather says, "Whichever one I feed." Now, I want you to get that. Whichever one I feed. If everything always exists, completely exists within me simultaneously, then the expression of my life, the outside of the expression of my life, is determined by my attention. My attention. Different from intention. Where I turn my attention to within me is what governs my experience. Now, this really matters because those of you who are in relationships, or those of you who have, especially with children, now it applies to everyone, but especially because I believe that we are each here to develop within us our own ministries. You might not think that that's why you came here, but there's no private good. So your good always becomes the good of others, always. Because as soon as you become happier and healthier and more loving, everybody around you benefits, right? I mean, happy people are nice to be around. So that's what we're doing here. So if all of this exists simultaneously within me and within you, what I'm hoping that we learn as a community here is that we speak to each other's good side, the loving side, the generous side, the excited side, the prosperous side, the healthy side. That we, even when you see evidence of something else, because you'll see people that even believe in their own limitations, you know, right? You with me? Some of us we believe in our own limitations, or we believe in the fear. But if we speak to the part of us that is higher, that is more present, that is more beautiful, that is what begins to flourish. It is pure quantum physics that which we observe is affected through our observation. That which we observe is affected by means of our observation. So my job and your job is to observe and be looking for the good. To be looking to acknowledge that in an individual. Because both exist, if I could unzip this human costume that we have, and I could pour the inside of me outside, and you could see it, you would see all the different textures of who I am. Same thing as all the different textures of who you are. But the one that we get to dance with each other in our life, is the one that you turn your attention to. So my job is to, I need to lower this, the speaker's a little bit hot. Can we do that, please? Can someone help her do that? Thank you. So we do that through our languaging. We do that through not complaining. We do it by not gossiping. And we do it by making an agreement with ourselves to pay attention to and to honor those parts inside of us that are magnificent. Some of you sitting here listening to me right now might not think that that exists inside of you right now. And it's simply not so. It's simply not so. There is a good, there is a grace, there is a greatness, there's a possibility, there's a magnificence. There's the artist in you, the musician in you, the poet in you, the healer in you. They all exist, and depending upon what you place your attention on, that thing grows. Is anybody with me on this? You with me? You know what I'm talking about? So our job is to do that with greater mindfulness. I've taken to saying this kind of funny thing. You've heard it in the classroom, and now I use it at home. Or I use it with my friends. And so let's say I'm having a conversation with Tony, and Tony wouldn't do this because she's my head practitioner. But let's say Tony set a self... deprecating, thank you, couldn't get the word out, deprecating comment about herself. What I've taken to saying to someone like that is, please be nice to my friend. Please don't talk to my friend like that. So this way, you're not making the person feel bad. You're not saying, oh, you shouldn't do that, or that's your consciousness, or you don't want to get on them. But you just want to say, please be nice to my friend. Please treat my friend the way my friend treats me. Because we let those things slip. And we don't protect that side. You know, and I was referred to that as protecting our I am. We're very clumsy with our I am. And I am is a perfect prayer. And that perfect prayer gets misused all the time. Anybody here know that they misuse their I am? First place to start creating change is to protect that I am and to use it mindfully and consciously with good intent. Now, you won't always believe what you say as you're saying it. You won't. That's a luxury that you don't want to worry about initially. We say it anyway. We say, I am the power and the presence and the love and the spirit of God right here, right now, by means of me. Do I see full evidence of that all the time? No, but that's still where I'm going to go. It's still where I'm going to go because I, through my intent and my attention, I'm going to cultivate that consciousness in me. And that's what we do in this teaching. We cultivate the consciousness by putting our attention there, putting our words there, putting our action there, and being bold about it. Being totally bold about it. In The Ideal Made Real, I know the book from last month, he says, in a true use of kindness and sympathy, there may seem to be kindness in weeping with those who weep, but it is a far greater kindness to give those people the power to banish their sorrows completely. And he who does this is not cold. He is the very essence of the highest and the most beautiful love. Sometimes some of the actions that we have around here because of this teaching and because of us, our practices as practitioners, we have the potential sometimes of not being or appearing sympathetic. I assure you that this is not so. I assure you that those of us who come to you as prayer practitioners come to you with mindfully reaching to that place inside of you that is your greatness. And so sometimes I'm going to stop the action. Sometimes in the midst of what you're saying, I'm just going to say no. Because I don't want you to even believe yourself anymore. Because you can talk yourself into misery. Anybody ever know how to do that? Talk yourself totally miserable? Isn't that shocking? And you're in the center. Stop it. Like, just stop it. You got to stop it. That is a misuse of the I am. That self-talk is so detrimental. It is so detrimental. It could sound like we're all going to become a bunch of steppered wives. I assure you that that's not possible. We have too much additional beauty and differences within us. And then in the middle of celebrating all that beauty and all of those differences, in the midst of that, we get to just grow that and grow the parts we want and grow the parts we want and grow the parts we want. So when I'm speaking to you, I, Michelle Wadley, I promise to collude with your highest and your greatest. I personally promise that when I speak to you as individuals, whether I've met you today for the first time or I've known you for throughout the time here, I promise to speak to the parts of you that are truly magnificent. I'm not silly. I know what goes on sometimes. You know, when you're child rearing, your kids make mistakes. Your kids make mistakes, and the worst thing you could do is put all of your attention on that mistake. Because the more you put your attention on that mistake, what happens, Paul Trainer? The more mistakes, and the more it just grows. A wise parent sees the mistake and then looks past it. And then, of course, you get a lot of mileage when you do those kind of things because your kid's forgiven you. You think you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. Like, my son decided to go to lacrosse practice the other day and left all of his equipment home. So, of course, I went and did the mom thing and went home and got the lacrosse stuff and walked it up. He's like, oh, you're the greatest, Ma. You're the greatest, Ma. And I got like a day and a half out of that. And that wore out a little bit. But, you know, I got a day and a half out of it. That was good. That was good. It was a good day and a half. But when we consistently speak to that side, when we consistently speak to the lover that's in each other, and the lover is a word that the Sufis use for God. They use the word lover. They use the word friend. They use the word beloved. Because they see that relationship as so close and so intimate that those are the names that they've used to name it. So we get to excite, pull out, acknowledge, and grow these things, not only in ourselves, but in each other. That's what namaste is. That is what there's another Sanskrit term. It's called tat tvamasi. I am that thou art. And so when I acknowledge that I am that thou art, I'm also looking again for the good. Or, you know, just the sweetness when you see someone struggling, it's to acknowledge, well, yeah, I am that thou art. And then to have that place of forgiveness and compassion that we bring out the best in each other. You know, we were commenting the other night that, and of course this is not real, that we think God got it a little confused. Gave us the bodies and the energy to procreate, but not the wisdom and the patience. We have the wisdom and the patience for our grandchildren, but the bodies and the physical energy for the younger version. It's very interesting. You think God being God would have done that differently, don't you? It really is interesting. But as a grandparent, you know, or as a someone who's older, and you look at a child, don't you just look at them like all is perfect? Like everything is totally perfect. And so we had a Four Agreements workshop yesterday, and one of the things I do during this workshop, and it's about not taking things personally. And I hold up a pretend baby, and I go around the room and I ask people, what would you say to this baby? And of course the words are, oh, you're so beautiful, you're so lovely, you're so welcome, I'm so glad you're here. These lovely, lovely, lovely words. And then I ask the question, well, when did you stop deserving to hear that? Trick question. The answer is never. We must use our creative language mindfully. We must deal with the inner of us, because that is how and where we are going to create the change. We pull it out of each other and we pull it out of ourselves. Now that means everything else on the side that's struggling is forgivable. It is totally forgivable. But our job as metaphysicians is to be that more. We were sharing in one of my classes the other day the people whose lives we've touched just beyond our lives. Like when we change the lives of the family members that we've touched. You know what I'm right? When you just stop being mad. When you just stopped being mad. How you brought something new to your family. When you started ceasing the habit of judgment and gossip. How you brought something new to your family. When you do those things, what happens is you begin to pull out these other aspects of each other. And then we begin to feel more and more and more safe. And then when we feel safe, we do more and more of it. But we are here to transform the inner self. It's like the Michael Jackson song, Man in the Mirror. I'm not here to change my outer world. I'm here to change my inner world. And I'm here to make room for that inner world to then demonstrate on the outside. Are you willing to give up your position about people being wrong? Because if you're not, this doesn't work. Are you willing to give up your position about people being limited? Absolutely required in order to have this happen. Are you willing to see the beauty and the wholeness in individuals? Because that's required. Now here's the thing. Are you willing to see it in you? Are you willing to see your magnificence and your strength? And focus there. And every single time you get something tempts you, every time something tempts you, you got to pull it back. You pull your attention back. And that's what we do. We retrieve our attention. We mindfully use it with conscious intent. Take no prisoners. Love everyone equally. Accept everyone equally. Forgive everyone equally. And we pave the way for change. We totally pave the way.